I'm David Hutton of Ophthalmology Times. Welcome to another edition of the iPod Podcast. Today I'm joined by Dr. Nina Hayter, the inventor of the modifier gene therapy, and Dr. Arun Upadhyay, Chief Scientific Officer and Head of Research, Development, and Medical at Ocugen. First, let's have a brief overview of modifier gene therapy.
Hi, David. Thanks for having me at this podcast. I'm happy to do this. So let's define what a modifier is and genes are, and then we'll go into what modifier gene therapy actually means. So a gene is a unit in your DNA that produces a protein. The protein does the work, actually. And we have about 30,000 of these. Not all 30,000 are not expressed in every single cell, but the code for them are present. I make a layman's analogy always of like, it's the recipe to you, your personal recipe on how you function. And so within the context of these 30,000, important thing to note is they don't ever function in isolation. They function in groups, sometimes groups of hundreds. And these are called networks, gene networks. And these gene networks then modulate and regulate and are the important conductors, if you will, of how you develop any part of your anatomy, any part of your body, and how you actually function. So I'm going to zoom in for our purposes on the eyes and the retina, which is the camera of your eye, the back of your eye, and the photoreceptor cells of the retina, which comprise about 70% of the cells that make up the retina are photoreceptors. And in those cells, about a tenth of your genome, so about 2,000 to 3,000 genes, are expressed. Now they work in concert. So what a modifier gene is, it's a gene, but it modifies how that network functions. And in this can happen in a normal context. It's a normal gene. It doesn't have what we call a disease mutation. So they're normally present. We each have many modifiers throughout our genome and in our body. And that's important to realize that we take advantage of these tools then when we were developing what's a modifier gene therapy that we'll delve into today. And so a gene is a normal, you know, we have 30,000 of them in the retina, you have about 2,000. These are what are the code for proteins that function. Modifier gene is one of those, and it modifies how another gene can function, whether it turns it on sometimes or off or regulates it in some other way, but it regulates the process of, for example, how do you make a photoreceptor cell or how does it function properly? It regulates those processes. So modifier gene therapy now, I'm deep diving a little more into this. Traditional gene therapy, which is called gene augmentation, it's when there's a gene that has a mutation, it causes a disease. And the replacement is, let's put the normal functional same gene, but a normal functioning version of it back in. A modifier gene therapy is very different in that. And what it takes advantage of and understanding of is that nothing functions in isolation. And every disease, we used to think when we learned Mendel and the peas, Mendel got it half right. And so I'm going to finish the other half of Mendel's story, that yes, you have these genetic players that determine, you know, hair color, eye color, whether you get a disease or not, but it's in the context of other genes. It's in the context, we're a product of our DNA and environment and they interact. And so there's a term and a sentence I coined many years ago, which was the mutational load. So a disease or clinical outcome is determined by the mutational load on a biological system. That mutational load includes the primary disease mutation in the gene, but also the influence of genetic modifiers on that mutation. And then there are epigenetic and other effects. So a genetic modifier will influence how a disease outcome looks. Now, it can either exacerbate it or it can suppress it. And we've spent many decades identifying those modifiers that will suppress a disease. So in the context of having the mutation, these genetic modifiers are able to suppress how that disease looks, and it looks normal. And we did this in a model system. So when we then expand that out into genetic modifier gene therapy, it's a really powerful tool, because irrespective of that genetic mutation, you can suppress the phenotype, then you can suppress the disease outcome. So what we did was, and we'll talk about today in the clinical trial work that's been happening, I'll start with retinitis pigmentosa. There's over 200 roads to get to retinitis pigmentosa. There are 200 different mutations and many different, hundreds of different genes, right? And you get the same problem. And that's how I kind of approached it. Well, you have many ways to get, but the problem is the same. So how can we, understanding that genes function in networks and influence biological pathways in that regard, how can we find the master regulators? And that's what we discovered with the modifier gene therapy, is a master regulator that can reset, in this case, the homeostatic state of the retina, and therefore in the context of disease, because disease happens not by just one pathway being perturbed. It then is the one bad apple spoils the bunch. A lot of other things start happening that are wrong in the retina, and it degenerates. And so, context of retinal disease, the modifier gene therapy is able to reset, because they're not mutations in all these other hundreds of networks and pathways and genes. The other 2,000 are fine. It's just one gene that was wrong, but their functioning becomes abnormal in the context of mutation. And the modifier gene therapy is able to reset that to normal function.
That's really fascinating. Ultimately, what can this mean for the ophthalmologist and the patient they treat?
Ultimately, for the ophthalmologist and the patients, I think it's going to be really profound, because now 30 to 40% of patients with RP, for example, don't have a molecular diagnosis. You don't know what their mutations are. So how are you able to develop any kind of therapy for that? This gives you a therapy and an answer for patients that would have nothing. At the same time, even if you know what genetic mutations some patients have, that particular gene may not be amenable to therapies. It may not be usable in the current context of what vehicle of delivery or what type of gene. Sometimes the cargo load is too big, etc. And in that context, even if you have a modifier gene therapy, it can alleviate disease symptoms and reset that state of homeostasis and thereby alleviate disease. So the potential for ophthalmologists, it's really powerful, because it's a one-stop shop, if you will. It's a master regulator.
Dr. Hayter, could you share with us your background in genetics, how you discovered nuclear hormone receptor, NR2E3, and how you came to work at Ocugen?
Sure. Partnering with Ocugen. I don't work at Ocugen, okay. I'll say, but I do work with Ocugen. So my background is, I'm a geneticist by training. I was actually part of the Human Genome Project, and it was a thrilling time to be in science. And what excited me was I made this discovery of, at that time, NR2E3, there was only one paper out that was called PNR, photoreceptor-specific nuclear receptor. And I was sequencing human chromosome 15q22, and the gene was in there. And I had a hunch this is going to be a gene for an important retinal disease. And so I screened a panel of patients, 200 patients, and found a lot of different mutations, and really defined that whole area of NR2E3 associated retinal diseases. And we actually changed this clinical landscape in a way from all of these patients. Many of these patients were known as enhanced S cone syndrome, Goldman-Farb syndrome, dominant RP, et cetera, CPRD. So there's a whole row of diseases, but they all had mutations in NR2E3. And so that's where I would talk with the clinicians and say, this is as a collective NR2E3 associated retinal diseases. And so I took that out of my PhD and then became really excited to see why and how is this one gene so powerful to, it's a nuclear receptor, it regulated gene expression, and it was impacting. Now on the photoreceptor cells, you have rods and cones. The rods are night vision, the cones are your color, and you have red, green, and blue. The blue cones are your least populous of all the photoreceptors. Yet if you lose NR2E3, you gained about 2.5-fold increase of those blue cones. That fascinated me. And so I progressed into my postdoc work and kind of made a career out of one gene to really deep dive into understanding how this influences normal photoreceptor function. And then later on, as we just made these discoveries, was how can this actually become a therapeutic? Because it's a master regulator. It's not a rod gene, it's not a cone gene. It's a nuclear hormone receptor, and it's pretty powerful and potent. And so that's the story of how we made NR2E3 into this big studies over many years, a couple of decades worth of work to really understand how this gene functions and modeling the diseases. And then our partnership with Ocugen was a really pivotal point, actually, in my career. I was thinking of starting my company, and then I had a couple conversations with the CEO of Ocugen, Dr. Shankar Musunuri, and they came over and they looked at our platform, and we decided to partner because I thought, why invent the wheel on things? They have a wonderful infrastructure, and I wanted to see this go from bench to the clinic to bedside to market. And we have done, I think, what's unprecedented. And typically, it takes over 20 years just to find a therapeutic and to get it into a clinic. And with our partnership, in less than 10 years, we were able to accomplish what I think, you know, I don't know anyone else that has, that we have taken something from preclinical and not only shown safety, which Dr. Pide will talk about a little more, but actually efficacy. And it mimics exactly what we saw in the model system, that this is a really powerful master regulator that can really help mitigate disease outcome for these patients with retinal diseases.
Excellent. Dr. Upadhyay, tell us about the ongoing clinical trials using modifier gene therapy and the data outcomes to date.
Thanks, David. Thanks for giving us this opportunity to talk about the work we are doing at Ocugen. And also, thank you, Nina. Thank you for summarizing the great work, you know, and the discovery you made at your lab, and how this particular discovery is basically potentially, you know, changing the way we look at the disease and the way we plan to treat this kind of diseases. So before I get into like providing update on clinical, to further what just Dina mentioned, I really want to add few things, how the ophthalmologist and the patient see at this therapeutic approach. And one thing, like we all can understand that when we talk about any inherited disease or any genetic disease, we always are under impression that if there is a mutation in gene A, that is the only problem. And why we believe that that is not only the problem. And the way to look at it, all the genetic disorder, we get those mutations from our birth, actually, since the fetus is conceived kind of, you know, during the whole development journey. But normally we don't see the impact of that mutation at the birth, right? A lot of these diseases, they develop over course of as we grow, as individuals become adult. So there's a significant heterogeneity, okay, in terms of the disease onset, disease severity, the way disease manifests, and the way that disease is going to impact that individual, though we carry the mutation in the same gene. Isn't that fascinating? There must be something going around, right? It is not just a mutation in that particular gene, but something what just Inya alluded about. Hey, mutational load, epigenetics, what the background is, right? Same rhodopsin gene, for example, in our context, there's a mutation in rhodopsin gene, but that child doesn't get blind at the time of birth, but we get blind over course of, you know, our life. And some may get that those symptoms manifested in the early, some may not even manifest their symptoms, okay, throughout their whole life. Maybe like they're able to manage their life with the vision they have. So there is something going on around. And that is where I believe modifier concept comes into the picture. Modifier gene or master regulator gene, a gene which has influence on other genes, which is part of the network, what Nina mentioned about. And they all together influence the outcome of the disease and the way disease is going to develop in an individual. And these master regulators have potential to somehow control those pathway, control those mechanism, and bring the homeostasis, bring the balance, which is optimal, which provides opportunity, which creates an environment around the retina or photoreceptor to prolong their survival okay, or improve their function. If they're surviving, improve their function, compromised function because of the mutational load. So that is how we look at the modifier gene therapy. Coming back to, so in this space, we have two products actually, based, both are based on the nuclear hormone receptor gene. One product is based on NR2E3 modifier gene, which we are developing. That pipeline is OCU400, and we are developing that for the retinitis pigmentosa and Leber congenital amaurosis. And we have another modifier gene in our product pipeline, that is RORA gene. It is another nuclear hormone receptor gene. And that particular product is OCU410, which we are developing for two indications. One is a Stargardt disease, and another one is advanced age-related macular degeneration, that is geographic atrophy. These three pipelines, we are already in clinic. For OCU400, already we completed phase 1-2 enrollment, and we are about to complete that study pretty soon. And for other program, OCU410, which is for geographic atrophy, we are enrolling the patient in the phase 1-2. And similarly for OCU410ST, that is we are developing for a Stargardt disease, that is also in the phase 1-2, a clinical stage, and we are actively enrolling a Stargardt patient in that study. So regarding OCU400, as you all know, it is AAV-based gene therapy product consisting NR2E3 gene. And our phase 1-2 study consisted of both retinitis pigmentosa patient as well as Leber congenital amaurosis patients. And this study was divided into two parts. In the first phase of the study, it was as a standard dose escalation, a study to identify optimal dose. And then further in expansion phase, we enrolled additional subject, RP subject with the maximum tolerable dose. And also we expanded this trial to dose some pediatric population as well as Leber congenital amaurosis patient population. Till date, we have completed enrolling 18 RP subject and 4 LC subject in this trial. Enrollment is complete. And also we provided some safety and efficacy update to the market from this ongoing trial. So far, we see that product is well tolerated and safe, and we don't see any safety concern. And most of the safety related adverse events were primarily related to, you know, surgical procedure, which get resolved, few days to the weeks time period. The one interesting outcome for this study was that in phase 1-2 study, we enrolled the patients with unrelated mutation. For example, in our trial, we have a subject with the rhodopsin gene mutation, we have subject with the CEP290 mutation, and we also have subject with the NR2E3 gene mutation. And when we did our efficacy outcome analysis, one noticing theme came out from that outcome was establishing the modifier function of NR2E3 in the rhodopsin mutation patient. Our product is NR2E3, but we see that product is giving the promising result, promising outcome, okay, on the visual function and the functional vision in the rhodopsin mutation associated patient. And largely these patients, we saw showing improvement on a visual mobility course, that is MLMT, multi-luminance mobility test, which is like a standard test used by, for approval of one of the gene therapy product, that is Luxturna. But in addition, we also saw patient improving on some other parameters like best corrected visual acuity and low luminance visual acuity. So we are seeing that significant portion of subjects responding on this parameter, which are a kind of biomarker, or you can say endpoint for these kind of patients in terms of demonstrating the potency of the molecule. Further, on that note, based on this data, we had a meeting with regulators and we also proposed our phase 3 design, and we have alignment with the regulator on our phase 3 study. Primarily, we got alignment on patient demographics. So this trial is going to enroll. Phase 3 study will be consisting pediatric as well as adult population, patient population. Also, we got alignment on our primary endpoint and the secondary endpoints. Primary endpoint for the phase 3 study is going to be MLMT course, which is But we are making certain modification on the course to address the ceiling effect, which a lot of subject we see that, you know, passing at 2 lux level. And also we get alignment on the study duration, which is going to be for 1 year follow-up after the treatment. Regarding our OCU410 product, as I mentioned, we are already in the phase 1-2 and we are actively recruiting patients. We are hoping to have some preliminary readout from these patients related to safety and efficacy by end of this year. Thanks, David.
And then of course, question comes, you know, what's next? So where do you go from here with regard to your research in this area?
So first I will take this question and then probably I will ask Nina to add further on that from the early stage development perspective. So for us, as you can see that most of these current pipeline are in the clinical development. So from that perspective for OCU400 program, our next step is getting OCU400 product for the RP and LC patient in the gene agnostic way. Like, and our phase 3 study, I want to add here that phase 3 study will consist of all the RP patient population. That's our plan, and that's what we are moving forward with. And further, you know, completing the trial and getting this product to the approval. Similarly, for OCU410, like geographic atrophy and Stargardt, our goal is to complete the phase 1-2 enrollment and do the safety and efficacy assessment. And based on that, you know, we really want to take this program to the later stage of clinical development. In addition, we are also exploring how NHR can be used in other retinal diseases, okay? Though these indications cover large set of the inherited retinal disorder, but still there are group of retinal disorder where we do see that this modifier gene therapy concept may work effectively in those patient population. So from early preclinical development perspective, we will be collaborating with Dr. Nina Heather on those fronts and hopefully we'll be taking this concept, you know, further into other indications.
Yeah, so maybe I'll pick up on that and continue that. Answering that question for you, David. And I think I want to revert back for a second and give a little more depth on something that both Arun and I covered that really gives us the, I think, the breadth of what the power of this modifier gene therapy can do. And then that will lead into the next phase of research, as you asked about. So one thing we observed in both the models, as well as now in, we'll see it in patients. I think in patients, the clinical view of it looks different than what we see. We can test on a molecular level in the models is exactly what we predicted based on my understanding of how DNA works and how genes and networks work, where that every one of the models, whether there was a model for rhodopsin or ABCA4 or CEP290 or NR2E3, that in addition to that primary mutation, which is our, you know, Mendelian genetic disease, they had a lot of other genes that were misregulated. And there were no mutations in those genes. However, because they're part of these functional networks, and these networks are how cell survival, cell death, neuroprotection, oxidative stress, the retina is the most highly metabolic tissue in our body. And these networks, and I'm listing a few of many that we looked at, but they were all had something abnormal in the gene expression level. When we put our therapy in, the modifier gene therapy, it reset those because there's no mutations in them. But the retina had made a decision that it was not going to survive, and it triggered these series of events. And I'm thrilled and excited to see the clinical work showing on a clinical level what we saw on a molecular level. And it's actually explaining this modifier gene therapy to show that you're going to have different mutations. They're actually all going to, in a very unique way, how a modifier gene therapy works in each person will be different, but you will see a positive effect is what's exciting. So the future and current research that we're exploring then is to expand on this. So there's, these were largely non-syndromic diseases, such as, you know, RP, it's just a mutation in this particular gene. But now we're actually going to also explore the use of this powerful therapeutic for syndromic forms, so, such as Usher syndrome. And maybe later on, we can explore some things like hereditaremia or Bardet-Biedl syndrome. So again, understanding that it's really not just a primary mutation, but multiple genes, and I'm talking in the hundreds or thousands, and networks that really go together to how the retina and the photoreceptors will function normally, that this powerful therapeutic is able to reset the homeostatic state of, and therefore the potential for this to really be a powerful therapy for not even just the RP space. And I don't say that lightly, that's a huge accomplishment. However, to actually look at retinal diseases across the board. And I think actually the exciting and hopeful, the other hopeful jump from here will be, this will be a model on how we look at gene therapies, whether they're in the eye space in the retina or in the cornea or glaucoma or actually even beyond other neurological diseases, that this will be a platform to really inform how we should approach gene therapies that, and there's multiple ways, and depending on the scenario, and this is where, you know, precision therapeutics, precision medicine, in the next few years, we're going to see a huge explosion in this, but there'll be a huge space for modifier gene therapies to play a strong role in this therapeutic event because of the power of what they can elicit without having to really understand and know all of the molecular underpinnings that are associated with that disease outcomes.